today, probably obviously, we're going to undertake microscopy. A microscope is so named because the word means small view. In other words, a device used to view something that's so small that the naked eye of a human can't see it. And there are many different categories. I mean, there are many kinds of microscopes, but there are major categories. What you have is a microscope in front of you, of course. But more specifically than that, it is a light microscope. Because this kind of microscope passes light through the specimen, the thing that is trying to be, the thing you're trying to look at, before it hits your eyes. Not all microscopes do that. There are electron microscopes that use beams of electrons instead of light. They feature much higher magnifications. You can see organelles. That's what generates those photomicrographs that I show you of the various organelles in this chapter, for instance. But anyway, this is a light microscope. And more specifically than that, this is a slide microscope, as opposed to the scopes that are in this third cabinet, which you can use either today or next time. Those are called dissecting microscopes. How do you spell dissecting? Two S's. A dissecting microscope still magnifies, of course. All microscopes magnify, but they are for much bigger things, like a bug or something that you want to look at very closely. A slide microscope, like the one in front of you, is called that because whatever you're looking at, whatever the specimen is first put on a glass slide. That's the only thing you use this scope for, glass slides. All right, now, microscopy is not easy. One of the purposes for being here today, and we're going to work with these scopes for 2 weeks, one of the purposes of being here today is to demonstrate that you probably all suck at microscopy at this point, because everyone starts out sucking at it. It's not as easy as it seems. It's more than just putting your eyes up to something. And so I'm going to talk about the parts of the scope and more importantly, how to properly use this thing. And then I'm going to see how many people obey the proper method for using it. All right? So this is a slide microscope, and there is a light source. There's a lamp in the base. So if you haven't already turned it on, you can do that with a switch. That power switch will, of course, turn the light on and off. But you have more control than that, because I guess it's on the left side of the base, there is a dial, a rheostat, or dimmer, and the dimmer controls how strong the light is. So it's more than just on-off. And this right away brings up a common mistake that people just beginning microscopy make. Humans tend to think, well, more is better. So they just max out the dimmer switch, given as much light as possible. That's bad in certain cases. You can have too much light, and the image doesn't look as good if it's flooded with light. But you need to be able to adjust it, because if depending on which lenses you're using, the amount of light that comes through is more or less. If it's less light that's being allowed through, then it makes sense to turn up the dimmer. Right. But anyway, the dimmer switch, or the dimmer control, is one way to control how much light passes through the slide. And if that's all you want to adjust, if that's the only thing you want to affect, is how much light is passing through it, then that's what you should be using, the dimmer. Don't forget it's there. Today. Play around with it and see how much it affects the quality of the image. Okay? I'll talk about something else that affects the light in a bit. More specifically than saying that this is a slide microscope, it is an example of a compound microscope. And so what, I can't remember exactly what's on the pre-lab, you might have already gone through this, but what is it that makes a compound scope compound? Yes, it's not simply that it has more than one lens. For instance, it's not because there are two lenses you put your eyes up to. That makes it binocular, not compound. You're right, though, that a compound scope has two different types of lenses, and even more specifically than that, in a compound scope, light passes through one type of lens first for a certain amount of magnification, and then it's remagnified when that light passes through a second lens type. So it's not only two types of lenses, the light goes through both in sequence, one first and then the other. And that defines two categories or types of lenses that are found on any compound scope. What are the categories? Objective and ocular, exactly. And that, I just listed those in the order in which light passes through them. The objective lens is so called because it is closest to the object or the specimen you're trying to magnify, the thing that's on the slide. Now, the simplest possible compound scope has just one objective lens. This one has four that you can choose from, but you're only going to be using three of these. Okay, so you're not using the longest one with the black and white ring. You're using the other three. Choice of objective lenses. But the simplest possible compound scope would have one objective and one ocular. This has multiple objectives and multiple oculars. The oculars are so named because ocular means of the eye. So the ocular lenses are the ones that you actually put your eyes up to. And the rubber cups on these are, they can be put out a little bit too. Those are so that you can put, if you have corrective lenses, you can put your lenses right up to them without scratching your lenses and get a better view. So light goes, in a compound scope, light goes from the light source, which is a lamp, through the slide itself, through the specimen, and then through an objective lens, which will magnify the image a certain amount, then through an ocular lens, which will magnify the already magnified image even more. That's what makes it a compound scope. And then finally, the light goes into your eye, which is when you actually see it, of course. Okay, that's the difference between those. Now, when you have a scope like this that has multiple objective lenses, nowadays, most of those kinds of scopes are also examples of, or they're called parfocal scopes. A parfocal scope is one in which changing from one objective to another, which means you're changing the magnification, it's arranged in such a way that if you already have it focused for one objective lens, and you switch to another objective lens to make it more magnificent, then it should still at least be roughly in focus. You don't have to completely refocus on a parfocal scope. You just have to tweak it a little bit. Structurally speaking, notice that all of these objective lenses on this model are mounted on a swivel. You can turn the black knurled swivel, and that's how you choose between objective lenses. What is this overall piece that contains the objective lenses called? The thing that swivels is called what? That's called the nose piece. Okay, so nose piece is can swivel to give you a choice of magnification, because that's the difference when you have multiple objective lenses to choose from. The difference between them is their individual magnifications. This is, brings up an important point about compound scopes. Each individual lens has its own magnification. You can see on the barrels of these objective lenses that each one has a different magnification value, 4x for the red one, for instance, and so on. That's the magnification due to just that lens. But the ocular lenses that light passes through after it goes through the objective also have their own magnification. In this case, they are 10x. Not, it depends on the scope, but for this one that we're using, the oculars have a 10x magnification just for themselves. And the overall magnification then, what you actually see, is the mathematical product of the two individual magnification values. So if you're using the 4x, then the overall magnification would be 4x times 10x, which is 40x. Which means 40x means that to your eyes, whatever you're looking at looks 40 times bigger than it actually is. Okay? Total magnification is just the multiplication of the two individual magnifications. Okay. Now, speaking of the fact that this is a slide scope, you, of course, don't view anything unless it's on a slide. You don't have a slide yet, but you'll get ones. You'll get some. This black platform is where you put your slides, of course, but even though it is a platform, we don't call it the platform. What is this platform called properly? It is the stage, exactly. And the stage has a hole in it, otherwise it wouldn't be of much good, because the light comes from below the stage and has to go through the slide. All right? Now, when you put a slide onto a scope, you always do it in the same way, not caring at all whether the slide is centered on that light. Don't worry about that. You put it in the only way that it will go in properly, into the silver clamp. On this model, it's silver. Notice that this clamp moves. Notice that the one arm of the clamp kind of moves to allow you to get it in there. So there's only one way to properly put a slide in there, and you should not care at all what its position is. You just put it in all the way into the back of the clamp, the only way it goes. All right? The reason you don't care about whether it's centered on the light is that this whole clamp is part of an apparatus controlled by a set of knobs that hang down to the right edge of the stage. And notice that that moves the clamp-like mechanism. That whole combination of the knobs and the clamp is called the mechanical stage. So it's no big deal if you put your slide on and it's way out of place, because then you just use the knobs of the mechanical stage to center it on the light. All right? Those two concentric knobs of the mechanical stage operate very similar to an etch-a-sketch, because one of them will move the mechanical stage left and right, and the other one will move them away from you or towards you. X and Y axes, in other words. So any combination is possible. And just like you can make a diagonal line with an etch-a-sketch, you can move a slide diagonally by moving both knobs at the same time. All right, now, there's something even more basic than that. You don't just go plopping a slide onto the mechanical stage without doing something first. Notice on either side of the neck, this part is called the neck, are also concentric knobs, but there's two versions of them. On either side of the neck, there's a huge knob and a smaller knob that, notice, move together. If you move that large knob, the small knob also turns, and even faster. Those are focus knobs. And so there are two categories of focus knobs, but there's duplicate versions on either side. The larger focus knob is called the coarse focus knob, and the smaller one is the fine focus knob. But go ahead and grab the coarse focus knob and notice that by turning it, what you're really doing is moving the stage either upward or downward toward the objective lens or away from the objective lens. Well, I said that these are focus knobs, but that's how you focus a slide. For a slide to be in focus for your eyes, the specimen that's on that slide has to be the right distance from the objective lens. So if we look at an objective lens from the front, and this is the edge of the slide, that distance between the lens and the slide is called the working distance. And for that to look focused to your eyes, the working distance, it has to be just right. Therefore, you focus a scope by making that distance right by adjusting the height of the stage. But before you even bother about focusing, you first have to, and even before you put your slide in, you have to use the coarse focus knob to bring the stage down as far as it'll go. That's simply to give you as much room as possible for one thing, but there's a more important reason that I'll talk about in a minute. Also, before you put a slide on, make sure that you swivel the nose piece so that you have the shortest objective lens in place, which is the red one on this model. On scopes like this that have a choice of objective lenses, there is, of course, one objective lens that has the least magnification, the lowest powered objective, in other words. And what do we call, in general, the lowest powered objective lens? That's called the scanning lens. And for good reason, this is a slide. You're never seeing an entire slide on a slide microscope. You're only seeing some, what looks like a circle to you. When you look through a scope, whether there's a slide in it or not, you see a circular region to your eyes. That circular region is called the field of view. But depending on the magnification of the objective lens that you're using, that circle that always looks the same size to your eyes is really changing when you change objective lenses. You know, you have some sort of sample in here. If you get a closer look, you do that by going to a higher magnification lens, which has a smaller field of view. It looks like it's the same size circle to you, but it's really zoomed in, and therefore everything in that is bigger, looks bigger to you. So changing the objective lens changes the diameter of the field of view, even though it looks like it's always the same size circle to you. Well, that's not the only thing that changes when you choose an objective lens. First let me finish up why it's called the scanning lens. It's called the scanning lens because when you first put a slide on, you really don't know what's on there that's interesting. So you want to have as wide of a view as possible, as big a field of view, big a circle, and the lowest power objective, whichever one that is on the scope at hand, is going to give you the widest view, the zoomed out the most, in other words. That's nice because you can then, with a wide view, use the mechanical stage to move the slide around while you're looking at it and just scan it for anything that might be interesting. If you find something that's interesting, you want to make sure you keep using the mechanical stage to make it right in the center of the field of view. Because when you go up in magnification by switching to the next objective lens, you're making that circle smaller. And if it were on the edge, now it's off of the next screen. You see what I'm saying? So center it first before you go up in magnification. Anyway, that's why it's called the scanning lens. That's one reason why you want to start always with the scanning lens. Every time you change a slide, you always start with the scanning lens. Another reason, though, is that it's shortest, and that gives you the greatest amount of room to work with to get your slide in there safely. That's another reason. But there's an even more important reason than either of those two reasons. And that is that by far the scanning lens is the easiest one to focus. And that has to do with another definition, which is called the depth of focus. So I said that this was the working distance, right? Now, there is really only one specific distance that is perfect focus for your eyes. And that's what you're trying to get at when you use the focus knobs. But because of the way our eyes work, we can't tell the difference between perfect focus and just slightly out of focus in either direction. It'll look the same to us. In other words, instead of there being just one distance that will look in focus, there is a range of distances. And as long as you're anywhere in that range, it will be focused to your eyes. That's called the depth of focus, however big that range is. Well, the reason the scanning lens is so easy to focus is because it has the largest depth of focus. So anywhere in that larger range is fine for your eyes. When you go up in objective lenses, you increase the magnification, which is nice, gives you a closer look, but it becomes harder to focus because that depth of focus gets smaller and smaller. And at high magnification, it is so small, the depth of focus, that it's not even as thick as a cell, which means you can't even see the whole cell in focus. You can use the fine focus knob and actually get different layers of the cell in focus at different places. That's much harder to do, though, so you wouldn't want to start that. You always start with the scanning lens, get it in focus first, and since it's a parfocal scope, when you then go up in magnification, it should still be roughly in focus, and all you should have to do is mess with the fine focus. Okay? Now to how to properly load this, use it. So you have pretend that you have a slide. You've already put the stage all the way down, and you've put it on the scanning lens, lowest power. You have the light turned on, it's just some medium dimness. You load the slide into the clamp properly, and then you roughly center it, just the center of the slide where you know the specimen is, using the mechanical stage. Now, I said earlier that you want to put the stage down to give you the most room to work. That's one reason, but it's not the most important reason. There's a much more important reason for doing that. If you imagine coming in and just putting a slide down onto a stage, whatever position the stage is in from the last time someone used it, chances are very slim that that's going to be perfectly the distance that's going to look in focus, right? It's going to be out of focus. But there's two ways that you can be out of focus. Either because you have the slide too close, the stage too far up, or too far down. Either one will look out of focus and your eyes can't tell which is which. So when you start with the stage all the way down, you know it's not going to be in focus. But you know that the reason it's out of focus is that it's too low. And therefore you know that if you bring it up, it will eventually become in focus. If you start somewhere in the middle, then you don't know whether it's too high or too low. If it's too high and you bring it up even higher, it's never going to come into focus. So that's why you do that. That's the more important reason for starting at the bottom. And always with the scanning lens, because it's so much easier to focus. Now, this is a binocular scope, meaning there are two oculars. That's important because that gives you stereoscopic vision, which is depth perception. You know, if you cover one eye, we have depth perception because there are slight differences in what our two eyes are looking at, and our brain makes a calculation. If you cover one eye and try to grab for something on the desk, you're not nearly as good as getting right there on to what you're trying to pick up. And similarly, if you have a monocular scope with just one ocular, you don't get that depth perception in the image. So you're cheating yourself if you're one of the students that I see do all the time by closing one eye to try to make it easier to use the scope. You should use both of your eyes to get the benefits of stereoscopic vision. All right, but doing that requires some personalization. Every individual has a scope because you need to, as part of the process, before you actually look at slides, personalize the scope to your body. All right, and there's two ways that you do that. One way has to do with the fact that humans with two eyes, which are most humans, have what is called the interpupillary distance, simply the distance between the two pupils. That's not a constant for humans. It varies from individual to individual. Some people have eyes close together, some far apart, anything in between. Well, grab these ocular lenses and notice that they can be moved farther apart and closer together. All right, so that allows you to personalize the interpupillary distance for your particular eyes. And the way that this is properly done, you can do this without even a slide on it, as long as you have the light on. When you put both eyes up to the ocular lenses, if you see two circles overlap, kind of like the Visa symbol, logo, then it's wrong. You'll see two circles if it's not adjusted correctly. You want to adjust them so that with both eyes open at the same time, you see just one field of view, one circle. And it's also affected by how close or far away your eyes are to it. So it's tricky. This is part of the difficulty. But anyway, that's one way in which you personalize this scope. You change the intrapupillary distance for the ocular lenses. Okay, now back to the process. At this point, we have the light turned on, medium dimness, stage all the way down, scanning lens in place. We've slapped on a slide and centered it with the mechanical stage. Now here's how you should do things. Close your left eye and look with just your right eye through only the right ocular. You don't have to do this right now, but just pay attention to the process. Okay, you're looking at through just one ocular lens. Your other eye is closed. You grab the, while you're looking through it, you grab the coarse focus knob and gradually bring the stage up because you know it's out of focus because it's too low, right? You need to get it high enough for your eyes. So keep looking, and it can take longer than you think it's going to take sometimes, but something, if you have it centered, something should eventually pop into focus using the coarse focus knob. Well, once something pops into focus, which it will once you have a slide on there, then adjust the coarse focus knob to get it as good as you can for that right eye. Then make it even better if you can by switching to the fine focus. That's with just your right eye, okay? Once it's as good as you can get it for your right eye, leave your hands off of both focus knobs because it's already set for that right eye, okay? Then close your right eye, open up just your left eye, and look through just the left ocular lens. Chances are it won't be in perfect focus. If it is, you're done, but it probably won't be. And this brings up the second way that you adjust for your eyes. Not only is the interpupillary distance different between people, but the ability to focus is different for the two eyes within one individual. So that's why this left ocular lens can be... Is it the left one? Well, these ones don't adjust. Well, that can't be. Do yours swivel? Oh, yeah, there's a neural... No, there isn't on this model. Yeah, notice that the left one can be swiveled. which is a separate focus just for that ocular. So remember I said that you keep your hands off of the focus knobs because you don't want to mess up the focus that you just set for your right eye. If it's not already in focus for your left eye, then swivel the left focus on the ocular until it's also correct for just that left eye. And assuming you've already properly set your intrapupillary distance, then when you open up both eyes, it's as good as it should be as good as it gets. And so do it that way. That's the proper way to do it, and you should do that every time you change slides. Now, you won't have to change the intrapupillary distance every slide. That should change. That should stay the same. But you should go through the focusing routine with the focus knobs every time you change a slide, because it's going to be different. Not all slides are the same. Any questions on that whole process? Yeah. Well, that's part of the focus. The reason, the way that it focuses is by changing how far or close it. It changes the barrel length.
Okay, because I can't get the
inner pupillary thing.
See how much it changes?
What?
That's part of the focus. See how when you swivel it, it goes out. No, don't pull it out. Just swivel it. Hold this, though, and swivel. Swivel the outer part.
Hold this. Oh.
There. That's how it goes.
Okay,
now, as far as what you're doing, I said we're going to do this for 2 weeks, because today you won't get good at microscopy yet, but you can at least do some basic things. So you don't do microscopes and cells, which are part of the same chapter. You just want to get up to page 80 today. You don't actually have to make a wet mount today. You may. If you don't do it today, you need to do it next week. So it's your choice, really. But there's, don't do that right away. Do some more basic stuff first. So we have prepared slides over here. Prepared slides are ones that you don't make. They're already made for you. And they're not temporary. Don't throw these slides away. But there's three categories, aluminum trays over here. Don't mix them up. Each tray is labeled. This one is flea, this one is colored threads, and this one is letter E. Make sure you put them back in the right place. Make it easy on the staff. But the flea is just interesting to look at in close-up. The other two, though, are here for a reason to teach you about microscopy. The colored threads one features three different colored threads. I think it's red, yellow, and blue, whatever it is. Red, yellow, and green, maybe. Doesn't matter. The point is they are situated so that one is at the bottom, one is in the middle, and one is at the top. They're layered. All right? And they're therefore at different distances from the objective lens. This illustrates what I was talking about before, as far as depth of focus is concerned. At the scanning lens, the depth of focus is so deep that you should see all three colors in focus at the same time, because they're all within that allowable range. When you go to high focus, you can only focus on one color, the other two will be out of focus. But by using just the fine focus, you can choose which one looks in focus to your eyes. So that's why you do that one. The letter E is a letter E from, like a typed letter E. And I see someone mixed them up. The letter E is big enough for you to see with the naked eye. It's almost regular book print. It's a little smaller. But you can clearly see when you get one that it's a letter E. What's so interesting about that? Well, it illustrates an important thing about microscopes, which is that the image that is what you see through a microscope is reversed right and left and inverted upside down. Okay, so you, by having the E, which you can see with your naked eye, you can tell which way you're putting that into the microscope. And then when you look at it, compared to how it's placed, it's going to be backwards and upside down. And not only that, when you use the mechanical stage, what makes it look like it's moving left to your eyes when you look through the scope, it's actually moving to the right because everything's backwards. So that's why you have that slide. Don't throw those away. Put them back in the right place. Like I said, you can do a wet mount today or next week. It doesn't matter, but I just want to describe what a wet mount is. It's called that because it involves using something wet, of course. But you use a blank slide, and you're unlikely to cut yourself with a blank slide, but you should still be careful because they're glass. On the other hand, though, the cover slip, which is also a piece of glass, is a lot thinner, and these will cut the hell out of you if you're not careful. Even if you know it's in your hand, but it will definitely cut someone's hand if it's in the middle of a napkin because you've left it there and someone picks up the napkin. So keep track of where these are. Do not have, you know, if they don't, I don't want to see a bunch of cover slips on the table. Take one. If you spill some, carefully put them back in the little container, and don't throw them away in regular trash. That's glass. So I haven't described the slide yet, but when you're done with your wet mount, you don't take the cover slip back off. Just keep the whole thing together, the slide and the cover slip, and put it in the glass disposal here, not regular trash. Okay, but we have pond water from the ponds that are on campus that might have some interesting thing to look at. Anyway, though, in general, when you make a wet mount, my hand is like the slide, the blank slide. You put a drop of whatever in the center of the slide, roughly. And then you want to cover it with the cover slip. But if you just haphazardly plop that cover slip down onto the droplet, you're going to trap a bunch of air bubbles in there. And you're going to think, some of you are going to think, oh, I have a hell of a lot of cells in there, all these round things, they're just bubbles. You're not looking at anything alive. So to minimize the chance of the air bubbles being produced, the way you do it, once you have your droplet on there, is to take your cover slip and put it on edge just to one side of the droplet and then let it fall onto the droplet, and that will force the air out the other side. And you'll have many fewer, if any, bubbles to deal with. All right, so that's the proper way. Look at it, do what it says in the manual, but when you're done with those, then just dispose of them. That's really all you need to do today. It's kind of a practice with the microscopes day, and then next week we'll do the cells part.